يا الله يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمار زكاة
يا الله
يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمار زكاة لتصي دليلتك
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Wa idh qala Ibrahim Rabbi arini kayfa tuhyil mauta qala awalam tu'min qala bala walakin liyatma'inna qalbi قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, the All Compassionate, the All Merciful. And when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take four of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening. And know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The International Court of Justice has warned that what is taking place in the Gaza Strip could lead to untold regional consequences. Hezbollah warns that if Israel keeps crossing red lines by targeting Lebanese civilians, it will pay the price of its action with blood. And the Ansarullah movement says that the U.S. exposed its hypocrisy by its pro-Israel move to designate the Yemeni group as terrorist. In our top story, the Gaza Strip is reeling from the Israeli military campaign, with the southern city of Rafah witnessing fresh airstrikes just ahead of a looming ground offensive. Nearly a dozen Palestinians were killed and a number of others injured in the attack, which targeted two residential buildings. Rafah is hosting some 1.5 million Palestinians taking shelter from attacks in other parts of Gaza. Israel's intensified its air raids on the city while preparing for a ground assault. Planned attack has sparked fears of a wider tragedy in Gaza, where Palestinians are already grappling with a dire situation. Israel launched war on Gaza in early October, killing nearly 28,800 Palestinians, mostly women and children. We demand a ceasefire. That is a message from a young Palestinian girl who lives as a refugee in the city of Deir al-Balah. She told our correspondent that she wants to send a message to the world through Press TV.
We live under continuous Israel bombing and live in very harsh conditions that we have never experienced before and didn't imagine that we would one day live. Here we are suffering a lack of food and drink. We are in real famine. At first we thought that this war, like all other wars, would last for a while and would end. But as you can see now, it's still there. The war is continuing. Everyone is in great sadness because he has lost his loved one, his relatives, and the home in which he lives. We demand a ceasefire, and we want to live like the rest of the world. I hope this message reaches.
The International Court of Justice has warned that what is taking place in Gaza could lead to untold regional consequences. The ICJ says the developments will exponentially increase what is already a humanitarian nightmare. The UN Court is calling for immediate and effective implementation of measures it demanded back on January 26. Now, back then, the ICJ called on Israel to prevent acts of genocide in Gaza. Meanwhile, the Hamas resistance movement has urged the court to directly order to a stop to Israeli onslaught on Gaza. This all comes after the Israeli Prime Minister vowed to go ahead with a planned ground assault on Rafah. And this has drawn reactions from international organizations and world leaders, including Israel's closest allies. The UN Secretary General says the ongoing situation in Gaza is a sign of what he called a deadlock in global relations.
The situation in Gaza is an appalling indictment of the deadlock in global relations. The level of death and destruction is shocking in itself, and the war is also spilling over borders across the region and affecting global trade. The humanitarian aid operation is now on life support. It's barely functioning. Humanitarians are working under unimaginable conditions, including live fire, multiple physical obstacles and Israel restrictions, as well as the breakdown of public order.
Antonio Guterres made the remarks in an address to the Munich Security Conference in Germany. Guterres also warned about planned ground offensive by Israel on the southern city of Rafah in the Gaza Strip. The UN chief said the assault will be devastating for civilians trapped in Rafah. Malnutrition is threatening the lives of tens of thousands of children in Gaza, and that according to the UN Agency for Children. UNICEF says the number will continue to rise if the situation does not change.
We have examined 2,000 children, and among the cases we checked was this child, who is 2 years and 7 months old. Before the war, before October 7, she weighed 11 kilograms. She is now 7 kilograms. So she's suffering from malnutrition. Her situation is difficult. She has complications. She suffers from dehydration, and she needs help. We have her the appropriate amount of nutrition supplements. We're trying our best to help her. We're referring her to a hospital where she can get treatment. That's all we could do so far.
Due to the conditions of the war in Gaza, the health and nutrition situation for children have changed. It has become an incomplete health system without vitamins, proteins, or fats in the healthy amounts. Children are relying on canned food, which contains preservatives. All this along with the fact that the water is polluted, the sand, the living conditions here that can spread diseases and germs. All this causes malnutrition among children in displacement camps in Rafah.
There are 325,000 children under the age of 5 who are at risk of acute malnutrition. UNICEF expects that in the coming days and weeks, there will be at least 10,000 children whose lives are essentially at risk if the situation does not change. This danger also comes as the health and drinking water systems face a complete collapse in the Gaza Strip, contributing to the spread of diseases. This creates a deadly cycle because we know that if children who are malnourished contract disease, their lives are more at risk.
Meanwhile, Palestinian resistance forces continue to push back against Israeli forces in Gaza as fighting on the ground continues. The military wing of the Islamic Jihad resistance movement says it's launched rockets towards Ascalon and settlements around Gaza. There's no word yet on damage or casualties, but earlier Israeli media said an Israeli soldier was killed during latest ground battles. Also, three others were seriously injured. Israeli media says a total of 233 soldiers have so far been killed since ground fighting began in Gaza in late October. Palestinian resistance groups, though, say the actual number is much higher. They say Israel is hiding the real number of casualties as it already faces public backlash over its handling of the Gaza war. The leader of the Hezbollah resistance movement has pledged retaliation for Israel's killing of civilians in southern Lebanon. Press TV's Beirut correspondent Mariam Saleh has your details.
On the martyrdom anniversary of three prominent leaders, Hezbollah Secretary General vowed that the resistance will retaliate for the Israeli strikes that killed civilians in South Lebanon, considering them deliberate massacres.
I tell friend and foe, the enemy will pay in blood for the bloodshed of our women and children in the last few days in Nabatea and Sawana and other towns of South Lebanon.
Analysts believe Nasrallah's words are very significant, but so is his deliberate silence on several issues.
This is the general approach which Sayyid Hassan always takes, trying to keep the enemy always in a state of psychological fear, not expecting, not being able to anticipate how the retaliation might come.
Hezbollah declared it launched a first retaliation for the massacres by launching Katyusha rockets against targets in Kiryat Shmona. But the leader of the resistance responded to the Israeli war minister Yoav Gallant's threats against Lebanon, saying the rocket capabilities of the Lebanese resistance goes beyond that.
Perhaps Gallant has forgotten that the resistance possesses a massive and precise missile power that enables it to strike Kiryat Shmona and all the way to Eilat.
He also underlined that the resistance front in the region as a whole has been able to enforce a balance of power, which bars the Israelis and the United States from achieving their goals.
He said that the Yemenis, in the action they took, did not resort to focusing on the Americans in their military operations, but rather continue to focus on Israel. And he said that that must remain the strategy. So I think that that's a very important. Sayyid Hassan continues to set realistic goals and to focus on weakening the Israeli side and not to go into some rash kind of action which could lead to strategically backfiring against the axis of resistance.
Hezbollah supporters commemorate yearly the martyrdom of Hezbollah's late Secretary General Sayyid Abbas Mousawi, who was assassinated in an Israeli strike on the martyrdom anniversary of Sheikh Raghab Harb, a leader of the grassroots movement. Hezbollah is also commemorating the martyrdom of its top military commander, Haimad Mughniyeh. The martyrdom of each of Hezbollah's leaders remembered today signaled a new stage in the resistance movement's development. Now, any miscalculation by the Israeli regime could be a turning point in Hezbollah's use of its covert capabilities. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
The Lebanese people show their strong commitment to the values of resistance against the Israeli regime, regardless of the price they may have to pay. They say they are ready to sacrifice whatever they have to protect their country. And here are some comments from people in the city of Nabatea in southern Lebanon.
No matter how long Israeli attacks last, we will indeed remain steadfast and not be defeated. We will remain holding on to our land even if we stay under the rain. We will be steadfast and not abandon our country or our land, even if it turns into ashes.
We want to relay a message to the Israeli enemy that we will remain steadfast here. As you have seen, they've targeted innocent unarmed civilians. They claim that the building houses objects affiliated to Hezbollah. However, in the morning it was revealed that their claim is false, and all those targeted are innocent civilians, including children and women. Unfortunately, this brutal enemy has been attacking innocent people because they are cowards. Nevertheless, we are steadfast and victorious.
Yemen's Ansarullah resistance movement says the U.S. exposed its hypocrisy by designating the group as terrorists. Ansarullah spokesman says that Washington backs global terrorism by supporting Israel and attacking Yemeni territory. Mohammed Abdul Salam says that Yemen will not give in to U.S. hegemony and will not back down on support for Gaza. Abdul Salam also says that Sana'a will continue its military operations in the Red Sea until Israel stops its onslaught on Gaza and ends its siege on the Palestinian territory. The Yemeni forces have targeted over two dozen Israeli-run or Israeli-bound vessels in the Red Sea since Israel began its genocide in Gaza on October the 7th. Washington designated the Ansarullah as a terrorist group on Friday. Police have been shot dead and four others wounded in a Palestinian retaliatory operation in a settlement near the city of Ramleh in occupied territories. Our correspondent in the occupied West Bank, Mona Kandil, joined us earlier with the details.
According to the Israeli military, a Palestinian arrived at a bus station in the illegal settlement of Kiryat Malachi near Asdod and Askalon in southern Israel, the lands that were occupied in 1948. He had a gun. He opened a fire at Israelis there. The Israeli paramedics immediately said that three Israelis had been killed, three others had been wounded, and they were in serious to, or let's say, between moderate and serious condition. But later, the Israeli police said that only six Israelis had been wounded. But in less than 15 minutes from now, Israeli paramedics and Israeli media outlets like Israel Hayom, let's say, and Yedaot Ahronot revealed that two Israelis had been killed and four others had been wounded. At least one of those four is in serious condition. and that the man who carried out the shooting was shot and killed. He was shot and killed by an Israeli settler there, an Israeli civilian, and not an Israeli soldier or a police officer, as the Israelis revealed. The identity of this Palestinian man is still unknown.
Jordanians have taken to the streets in solidarity with Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip. They call for an end to the kingdom's exports of produce to Israel.
The Jordanian people feel ashamed that the government is allowing the land bridge to save the Zionist entity and exporting vegetables and fruits to this entity at a time when our people are besieged in the Gaza Strip, deprived of water, food, and medicine.
This was the 19th consecutive week of such nationwide protests, including in the capital, Amman. The demonstrators decried Israel's atrocities in Gaza hospitals and massacre of civilians, including women and children. They called for international intervention to stop the genocide and lift the blockade on Gaza. Earlier this week, Jordan recalled its ambassador from Israel and told the regime's ambassador to stay away. This was in protest at the relentless Israeli bombardment of Gaza. Pro-Palestinian sentiment is widespread in Jordan, which shares a border with the occupied West Bank and hosts some 2.4 million Palestinian refugees. Jordanians have been calling on the authorities to close the Israeli embassy and scrap the unpopular 1994 peace treaty with the regime. Iran's foreign minister says Israeli genocide in Gaza will inevitably have adverse impacts on the security and stability of West Asia. Hossein Amir Abdollahian made the remark during a phone call with the Saudi counterpart. He says such effects will occur if there is no immediate political solution. Amir Abdollahian reiterated that Tehran does not consider war as solution. Iran's top diplomat also called for an emergency ministerial meeting of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation on Gaza. Faisal bin Farhan al-Saud welcomed the call. He also criticized Israeli Premier Benjamin Netanyahu's defiance of international calls for a ceasefire in Gaza. And it's another setback for war hawks in Washington as Congress has rejected President Joe Biden's latest war spending bill. Analysts expect Biden to try again next month when Congress is back in session, but public resistance to America's endless wars continues to mount. Rami Mazahiri reports.
In the United States, Congress has broken for winter recess without coming to an agreement on a nearly $100 billion weapons package, which would have funded wars in Israel, Ukraine, the Red Sea, Taiwan, and elsewhere for years. The bill had passed the Democrat-led Senate, but the Republican-majority House of Representatives refused to vote on it in a setback to President Joe Biden's war planning.
Let me be clear here again this morning. The Republican-led House will not be jammed or forced into passing a foreign aid bill that was opposed by most Republican senators and does nothing to secure our own border.
Earlier this month, Biden unsuccessfully tried to force through a $120 billion war spending bill, which even cynically tried to win over Republicans with $20 billion in anti-immigrant border security spending. While top polling agencies have remained mostly silent on the issue so far this year, the most recent polls confirm that public support has plummeted for more weapons to fuel foreign wars. There is an increasingly vocal desire to end American warmongering abroad and to focus money, energy, and attention on the raft of post-pandemic and post-great financial crisis domestic problems.
The situation here on the ground is definitely can be radicalizing because people are not even being provided with any of the usual concessions that imperial nations oftentimes, you know, give their citizens to keep them distracted. They're just being left out there while, again, we are giving billions and trillions to other countries to fight wars that are supposedly on our behalf, and yet we don't get to have any input in that.
The Biden administration has repeatedly rejected any negotiated settlement to the Ukraine conflict and has no strings attached to its unshakable support of Tel Aviv.
Many say it's just a matter of time before more weapons are eventually sent to Israel and Ukraine, despite the global outcry.
We have to remember that these wars go on until America is defeated. Eventually, the public turns against every war. The war keeps going until it's no longer useful to big business, and it's no longer useful to defeating our rivals and corralling world energy resources.
The failed bill explicitly prohibited any funds for the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees, which is the main humanitarian agency in Gaza. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Thank you for joining us, and goodbye for now.
The whole world is silent towards oppression. Even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite, words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all, from the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O the Most Merciful.
In the limelight.
Pro-Palestinian activists have complained of suppression of speech since the Zionist regime's war on Gaza began on October 7th. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, a prominent pro-Palestinian advocacy group in New York City, Within Our Lifetime, or WOL, had its main Instagram page, backup accounts, and founder's account shut down recently. WOL wrote on X, as Zionist forces continued their crackdown on Palestine online and in the streets, Instagram has permanently deleted both WOL and WOL chair Nerdin Keswani's main and backup accounts with no option to appeal or request a review to restore them. But the more they try to silence us, the louder we will be. According to the New York Jewish Week, a spokesperson for Meta told them that the accounts had been removed because they violated the platform's community guidelines, including its dangerous organizations and individuals policy. Keswani received a message from Meta saying that her accounts were removed because your account or activity on it doesn't follow our community guidelines. Middle East Eye reached out to Meta for comment but did not receive a response by the time of the publication of this article. Abdullah Akel, an activist with WOL, told Middle East Eye, Meta is telling us that we are banned from their platform because we as individuals, we as an organization, are going against their policies. It makes it very clear that if we are standing against this genocide and we aren't allowed on this platform, that Instagram has taken a side. We will continue what we are doing. We will make it clear to the world that we will not be silenced. We will only be louder. A December 2023 report from Human Rights Watch, HRW, said that Meta, which runs Instagram and Facebook, is systematically censoring content about Palestine on their social networks. The 51-page report, Meta's Broken Promises, Systematic Censorship of Palestine Content on Instagram and Facebook, released recently by HRW, documents a pattern of undue removal and suppression of protected speech, including peaceful expression in support of Palestine and public debate about Palestinian human rights. Deborah Brown, Acting Associate Technology and Human Rights Director at HRW, said, Meta censorship of content in support of Palestine adds insult to injury at a time of unspeakable atrocities and repression already stifling Palestinian expression. Brown added, social media is an essential platform for people to bear witness and speak out against abuses, while Meta censorship is furthering the erasure of Palestinian suffering. When Meta was accused of suppressing pro-Palestinian speech last year, Meta blamed technical bugs, claiming this bug affected accounts equally around the globe and had nothing to do with the subject matter of the content, and we fixed it as quickly as possible. But the Hampton Institute think tank accused Instagram and Facebook of actively blocking posts about the factual history of Israel and Palestine. Middle East Eye at the time asked Meta that steps were being taken to ensure access to Palestine-related content and whether the company was suppressing pro-Palestinian content, what was referred to a 13 October newsroom post. The statement said that Meta's policies are applied equally and that there is no truth to the suggestion that they are deliberately suppressing the voice. Both Keswani's and WOL's Instagram accounts have been removed in the past, but were always brought back. It is unclear if the removal of the account is permanent this time around. For the past few weeks, WOL has been organizing protests and rallies across New York City to spread awareness of the Zionist regime's crimes against Palestinians. The activists are not afraid to call out politicians by name and often bring speakers who are directly affected by the war in Gaza. These efforts highlighted after the October 7th, when the Zionist regime's war in Gaza broke out, when multiple protests were being organized every week, many of them organized within a day. The WOL Instagram page was an important way for the organization to let people know about upcoming protests and demonstrations against the fabricated regime of Israel. Recently, activists held an emergency rally in Manhattan outside News Corp and eventually marched through a tunnel, shouting for a free Palestine.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Gaza under attack. Welcome back to Gaza under attack, coming to you from the British capital, London. I'm Saeed Pourreza. We'll get you my panel of guests in just a moment, but before that, a quick recap of some of the latest developments. a pressure cooker of despair. That's how the UN described the southern Gaza city of Rafah, where more than 1.5 million Palestinians are sheltering and are now forced to flee again ahead of a possible Israeli ground offensive. Also, another escalation. At least one Israeli soldier has been killed and 8 others injured after rockets were fired from Lebanon into the city of Safad. It came after apartheid Israel said it bombed southern Lebanon overnight. And calls for banning the Israeli regime from all global sports competitions gain momentum. European Parliament member Claire Daly signs a petition calling on sports federations worldwide to suspend the apartheid regime until it complies with international law. So far, the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war on Gaza has killed at least 28,000 Palestinians and wounded some 69,000 others, with no sign of the massacre ending anytime soon. Joining me to talk about it all is Ammar Kazmi in the studio. Ammar is a legal and political analyst and worked in the parliamentary office of former Labour MP Chris Williamson. And joining him via Skype is Dr. Nahad Khanfar, a lecturer in law and politics. Gentlemen, welcome to you both. I'll start with you, Ammar. South Africa has launched an urgent request to the International Court of Justice over Israel's planned Rafah offensive. Explain what it might mean and if it has any greater chance of stopping the carnage from going ahead than the other ruling that came earlier.
Well, look, I was on an earlier program before discussing the ICJ, potential outcomes of the ICJ judgment, and I took a pretty cynical view, which was that I didn't think it was really going to amount to much. I didn't think it was going to have any material effect in stopping the genocide in Gaza. I think a few weeks now since that has happened, that has been proven to be true, because ultimately the enforcement powers of the ICJ are very limited. Ultimately, it is the job of the UN Security Council to enforce ICJ decisions and judgments. And we know that the United States of America is a permanent member of the UN Security Council and can veto anything that they decide to do. Now, of course, it's very important what South Africa is doing. It's continuing to raise the issue in terms of from a legal perspective. We've seen that as a consequence, some countries like the Netherlands have decided to stop the export of certain types of weapons and parts, spare parts to Israel. And it could be the case, and it does sometimes happen where the ICJ, after already making an order, could decide to take additional provisions and measures. But ultimately, again, it comes down to enforcement. So yes, it may potentially help to ramp up the pressure on some governments who are supporting Israel to desist from doing that. Yes. But in terms of literally intervening and stopping what's happening, I don't think that's what we're going to see as a result of
and
this.
And what it will probably also do is keep the Palestinian plight in the spotlight for the world to see. Dr. Khanfar, the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu and his war cabinet seem hell-bent on pushing forward with this plan to launch an incursion into Rafah, despite pleadings and outrage from sections of the international community. What could cause Israel to pause at this stage? Because Ammar believes that even if there is some kind of measure from the ICJ, it has to go to the UN Security Council, where the U.S. will veto it.
The Americans, the only people really can stop this, and they are the only partners they can impose serious pressure on Netanyahu. But it seems to be that Netanyahu trying all the time to preserve his position as a prime minister because he doesn't want to face consequences if this war just has an end. And it seems to be that the Americans still not really very much interested in calling for a ceasefire simply because they wanted to give Netanyahu any kind of victory, like any picture of victory in any way or form. And it seems to be that they are counting on Netanyahu to achieve something at any point. like what happened with this ridiculous operation in releasing the two hostages, which seems to be it's being questioned really by the serious Israeli newspapers, where they are saying there is a lot of exaggeration in presenting this release. And the Americans apparently still really signing the blank check for Netanyahu just to carry out this genocidal actions all the time. So I don't see in any time, like any near time, any kind of positive response from Netanyahu.
And Amar, how do you square what we just heard and what you said earlier with the U.S. president calling Netanyahu an recently and calling what's happening in the Gaza Strip as over the top? Yet, yes, of course, we see the huge package of aid for Israel at the same time. But what is your reading into this whole thing?
Well, I mean, when it comes to Joe Biden, I would seriously question his mental faculties at the moment. But look, I mean, I think that we see very often Western politicians, particularly those in the United States, may in private have serious questions about what Israel is doing. They may in private very much oppose what Israel is doing. But ultimately, we're in a position now where I think the tail wags the dog. Mm. You know, people talk about Israel as being an extension of the United States. Well, actually, if you look at the amount of lobbying power that Israel has managed to influence within the United States, I think it's now really the other way around. Israel is dictating U.S. international policy. And so it doesn't really matter what they may privately think. Ultimately, they are signed up to a political system in which they are obligated, really, to support Israel. So I think that's really why we see these contradictions.
Correct. Gentlemen, stay with me. We're going to bring in what the UN chief has been saying, and then we'll get back to you shortly. Well, Antonio Guterres says an Israeli military offensive in Gaza, the southern city where some more than 1.5 million Palestinians have sought refuge, will have devastating consequences. He has told reporters that Tel Aviv has imposed restrictions that are limiting the distribution of desperately needed humanitarian aid. He said the current mechanisms for protecting humanitarian workers distributing aid in Gaza are not effective. Here's more in his own words.
I know that Prime Minister Netanyahu doesn't take your phone calls. You have not been able to speak to him despite your best efforts. We know that he is preparing potentially for a ground invasion to Rafah. If you could speak to Prime Minister Netanyahu today, what would be your message?
Well, I am particularly worried with the deteriorating conditions and security for humanitarian aid delivery in Gaza. There is a breakdown in public order. At the same time, we have restrictions imposed by Israel that are not improving and limit humanitarian distribution. On the other hand, the deconflicting mechanisms to protect humanitarian aid delivery in relation to military operations are not effective. And so my sincere hope is that the negotiations for the release of hostages and some form of cessation of hostilities to be successful, to avoid a all-out offensive over Rafah, where the core of the humanitarian system is located, and that would have devastating consequences. Thank you very much.
General, two more journalists were targeted.
The UN Secretary General speaking there. Dr. Khafer, as we know, the UN chief and the Israeli Prime Minister have a fractious relationship, with Tel Aviv succeeding to a degree in sidelining the global body altogether. How does the aid agency get around this? People are dying all around as we speak.
As a matter of fact, it is something about like can be described just really horrific. I mean, what we get from the ground, just I was talking to some colleagues earlier, which they have some connection to Gaza, especially to the humanitarian aids. They are really giving a very terrifying picture, because the situation on the ground, especially when it comes to the food, to the medical basic needs, is just very, very restricted, and the people hardly getting really what they can eat on daily basis. Many of the people, they can't really get any kind of food portions on daily basis. So sometimes they eat one day, they might not find food for the next day. The organizations just trying their best to, you know, just to really work around these kind of restrictions, and it seems to be the Israeli government is really just pushing all their plans forward in order to starve the people and just to put more or to mount more pressure on the Palestinian resistance in Gaza, because it seems to be this is the only way probably to achieve some compromises from the Palestinian resistance in the negotiations. So situation is becoming, you know, very difficult, and it seems to be the Israel is just really challenging all the world, no exception, whether the United Nations, whether the European countries. We have heard yesterday what Borrell was saying. He was clearly devastated. Yeah, there is no attention whatsoever to any call, any announcement, any condemnation from the international community. So Israel is just really positioning itself to be above anyone, above everyone, above any kind of action.
There's some movements in some quarters in Europe, of course. You mentioned Europe there, Amar, and that's what I want to talk to you about. We know Israel is blocking aid in contravention of the ICJ ruling. As I said at the beginning of the show, at the top, that there have been rockets fired into northern Zionist entity, killing one soldier, injuring a number of others. And at the same time, the independent bloc members of the European parliamentarians are pushing for the full pariah treatment for Israel, including being banned from international events. We've seen it done to South Africa in the last century and to Russia in recent years. What do you make of that route?
Well, look, I think the EU, we have to be very careful, because it's not a homogenous bloc. We talk about the European Union, but there are different powers vying for authority in there. You have Germany, which is obviously very fanatically pro-Israel. But then you have other member states like Spain, Ireland, France to a lesser degree, who have either opposed Israel right from the very beginning or have taken or sort of grown impatient with the scale of the offensive.
And the French have slapped sanctions on some of the settlers too.
100%. And actually the United Kingdom is also planning to do something similar. So, you know, but I think clearly the mood is turning. We saw the EU foreign policy chief, which we just mentioned, Josep Borrell, who has said some pretty wild things. In general, is quite a, in my view, quite a pro-colonial man, quite a racist person. Now coming out and saying these really incredible statements about Israel, and saying that if you want to stop Israel committing its offensive, then you have to stop supplying them with arms. So I think that there is a mood turning, not just among sort of, you know, independent parliamentarians, but actually across some very senior levels of member states of the European Union. And so I think we could get to a position, particularly if Israel did launch a full-scale attack on Rafah, and it really, really got out of hand, much more than it already has, where, you know, we could get to...
Is that really what it takes, and not 30,000 Palestinians already killed?
Well,
does it have to really be that red line to be crossed by the Israeli regime for these countries to finally come out and say enough is enough?
Well, I mean, it's clear that there's a huge contradiction between how people's lives are viewed. We saw with Ukraine, a white European country, when that was, when Russia launched its operation against Ukraine, there were sanctions slapped on Russia straight away. It was made into an international pariah state, a huge increase in Russophobia even, yeah, among ordinary Russians in Europe. But when Israel does this, it doesn't, we don't get the same treatment. But I do think that if it gets to an even more serious point, that I think is probably what it will have to take, unfortunately, in Europe for the mood to change substantially.
Okay. Now, Dr. Khanfer, do you think also that on the question of what might make Israel think twice about launching that massive incursion into Rafah, the rockets that have been fired into northern Israel from southern Lebanon, although Hezbollah, the resistance movement, the group in Lebanon, has not claimed responsibility, but there have been rockets fired, one Israeli soldier killed, a number of them injured. Do you think that is why a message from the Lebanese to the Israelis, look, if you go ahead with this, then we're going to hurt you?
Yeah, I think this was very obvious from the speech delivered by Hezbollah leader Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah. He actually made a very clear connection between the escalation in Gaza and what's happening in North Lebanon, so in South Lebanon. So by the end of the day, it seems to be the message is very clear, and I don't think we can really raise too many questions about it, whether it is connected or not connected. It seems to be very much connected, and the Hebrew newspapers today, I was looking into some of them published in Hebrew. They were very much talking about the speech delivered by Hassan Nasrallah yesterday, and they gave it really a very, very high level of a credit and a credibility that if the situation in Gaza is gonna to be solved sometime soon, then we would expect a ceasefire also in Lebanon or from the Lebanese side. So yes, the connection is there, and I don't think the Hezbollah is playing games here, because in the previous truce, this is exactly what happened. It was for almost 1 week, and the truce started in Lebanon or from Lebanese
Correct.
Side.
Correct.
So so the kind of a pressure we can imagine is there, and I think it might be escalating as far as the Israelis are escalating their military operations in Gaza.
It's all a matter of time, of course. Just a quick reminder before we move on, this is Gaza Under Attack, a deep dive into the news surrounding the ongoing U.S.-Israeli genocidal war on Gaza's captive population. Well, the disconnect between the British public and politicians who continue their unequivocal support for the U.S.-Israeli genocide of Gazans is even more pronounced. Voters, according to pro-Palestinian activist Naile, are now extremely cautious about how they will be using their votes in the general elections later this year. Naile went on to say that politicians have their own agenda that usually have very little to do with the most vulnerable.
I think they seem to have their own agenda. I think there's a lot of lobbying by the Israelis. I think a lot of people are in the pocket of the Israelis. I think both Labour, I know that a lot of Labour front benches have all taken money from the Israeli lobbyists, and I suspect the same is true for the Conservatives as well. I think it's very, very questionable, and I think it's extraordinary given the amount of these protests that so little notice is shown, and maybe they just feel that come election day this will be a side issue, but I think it's gone so far beyond that for many people. Well, I'm a previous Labour voter and Labour member, and I am not voting for the Labour Party under Keir Starmer. I will vote. I'm in Brighton, so I've got a very potentially strong Green candidate. They've called for a ceasefire, and they are not in the pockets of any lobbyists. I've been to Israel over the last 30 years, so I've seen the horrors that have been there. This, of course, is unprecedented. And I do think it has changed. I think it's made people very disassociated from politicians.
Fear and panic grip Palestinians sheltering in Rafah as hostilities expand in the densely packed area, supposed to provide a safe refuge for over 1.5 million people. The World Health Organization says there truly is nowhere safe in Gaza. People are already living in unimaginable conditions. According to the WHO, a new wave of displacement and additional injuries will have a catastrophic impact on people's health and mental well-being and increase the trauma burden on the already ailing health system, pushing it closer to the brink of collapse. Let's listen to one displaced Gazan.
Last night was really terrible. We lived in terror as if it was doomsday. There was gunfire in every direction and we had nowhere to go. They told us this area was safe. They told us Rafah was safe. The bombardment was in every direction, not knowing where to turn or where to go. We felt like we were going to die.
Well, let's continue the conversation with my guests. I'm Ammar Kazmi and Dr. Nahat Khanfer as we enter the final moments of the show. Ammar, as we heard the activist there who talked to us in a recent protest, pro-Palestine protest, that a lot of the politicians are in the pockets of the Israel lobby and Zionists, there are already signs that there are some politicians who will pay with their political futures for their stance they've taken on Palestine. Azhar Ali is one of them in Rochdale, Manchester, triggering a by-election. Now others vying for that position. What do you make of that comment and also your own experience with it all?
Well, yes, I mean, I was a member of the Labour Party for 6 years. I was involved in many campaigns on a parliamentary level. I worked in Parliament for a Labour MP. And so, ultimately I felt compelled to leave the Labour Party much earlier than many people are sort of now doing back in May 2021, because it became clear to me that really Keir Starmer had ceded all political sovereignty when it came to the issue of Palestine, Israel, anti-Semitism, Zionism, to the Israel embassy here in Britain. And so I thought that the Labour Party had been totally captured, and really on this issue there was never going to be any budging. However, that political trajectory, that very strong pro-Israel political trajectory, yeah, I think is now going backwards. Yeah. We're seeing now people waking up to the horrors of Zionism, not just of this particular current Israeli government, but actually of the Zionist project, realizing that the charge of anti-Semitism is a very cheap one, and weaponized, of course. And the Muslim community in Britain, which has for such a long time supported the Labour Party, you know, my parents' generation and grandparents, many of them supported the Labour Party, have now been shaken out of that to such a large degree. If they weren't before, they've seen now that Keir Starmer's support for the genocide in Gaza is utterly untenable. And so because Muslims across Britain are a huge political constituency, they really have the power to turn the tide at the next general election. And so I think we could see 100% many politicians, not just in the Labour Party, but in the Conservative Party, who've supported this genocide being unseated or being targeted.
There's a level of awareness now among the public unlike any other time. Well, we're fresh out of time, gentlemen. Thank you, Ammar Kazmi and Dr. Nahat Khanfer, for coming on. And thank you for spending time with us on Gaza Under Attack. Join us again tomorrow for more. Until then, continue to keep Palestine in your hearts. Goodbye.
In the Limelight.
White House has called on Congress to pass security bill with military aid for the Zionist regime, as experts say Washington is tethered to Israel's war effort. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, U.S. President Joe Biden urged the House of Representatives to pass a $95 billion national security funding bill that includes billions in military aid to Israel, underlying the U.S. administration's continued belief in unconditional military backing for the Zionist regime, despite tensions over a looming invasion of Rafah in Gaza. Hours after the Senate finally approved security funding for Ukraine, Taiwan, and Israel, recently Biden challenged the House of Representatives to move on this with urgency. The bulk of the bill provides $60 billion in military aid to Ukraine, whose stock of ammunition supplies is rapidly dwindling. But it also sets aside $14 billion in aid to Israel, which Biden, in a statement, claimed will provide Israel with what it needs to protect its people. The bill would provide an additional $10.6 billion in military assistance to the Zionist regime, in addition to the $3.5 billion in foreign military financing it regularly receives, while it earmarks $1.6 billion in humanitarian assistance for Palestinians in Gaza. It specifically prohibits funds from going to the UN Agency for Palestinian Relief, UNRWA. In response to the Zionist regime's allegations that members of the agency have ties to the resistance group Hamas.